have a question in Mom Squad. We went through kind of that graphomotor sequence. And let me tell you, that is such a powerful technique, that skill of developing muscle memory and visualization of letters. I can't tell you how many of our kids, when we go and we test their writing, we do writing samples, it looks like they draw their letters. Mm-hmm. They're not actually, they don't have that like muscle memory. Like, you know, if I go to write a G, I'm going to start in the same place and make the same stroke every single time. And we have kids, let me see if I can even, you know, they might start down here and go up. They might start up here and go down. It might look like a 9. It might be backwards. It might look like a 6. And it's like every time they go to put pencil to paper, they're guessing and they're drawing. And so that technique, that graphomotor sequence that Jill showed, is so powerful because it's helping them to develop that muscle memory of like, this is how I always make a G, and then associate it with that, with the sound, is so powerful. So
and,
I love that.
Adding the rhythm in there really anchors all of that. That sort of pulls it all together.
Yes. To make it automatic, because that's the other thing. It's like, if you have to think about what your letter looks like every single time you make it, you're going to be, I mean, it's just going to like bottleneck the entire process. So mm-hmm. really powerful technique that we've seen in our learning centers. I do have a parent asking in Mom Squad, just kind of in regards to this graphomotor training. She asked, how old is too old to work on handwriting? She has a 13-year-old son and his writing is atrocious. So how old is too old to work on handwriting?
You know, it is never too old to work on any of these skills, because the brain continues, it continues to have the ability to change with training. You know, by 13, there are some pretty ingrained habits. Pencil grip is very difficult to change as students get older, but I would definitely go after it. And because you're using a little bit different medium, you know, you're using that fat chalk and you're using fat crayons. So you might be able to start to adjust the pencil grip a little bit with that. It's going to be harder if you try to get them to do it with a pencil right away. But with these fatter, you know, implements, you might be able to get them to do that. Adding that rhythm in, that's just going to make a huge difference. And I'm sure you all know this, but you can, you know, get a metronome on your phone now, you know, so don't even have to go out and buy one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's not too late. And being on great big large paper, you know, and doing it really big on a chalkboard or on the ground, it just makes it different than trying to practice handwriting on paper. So, you know, start there with the large muscles and the rhythm and have some fun with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Stephanie, we were reading your mind. She also has a 13-year-old. So it's kind of two moms, same brain. And so she, piggybacking off of that, she's also asking about her 13-year-old. Is this effective? So we answered your question even before you asked it. Great. We have some more people kind of checking in as we've been talking. Heather says she's here to find additional tools for struggling dysgraphic middle schoolers. So again, that teenage population that's mm-hmm. struggled with writing for so long. And we said that it's not too late. We have Virginia, and I don't know if you're saying you're from Virginia or that's your name, but your kid hates writing, definitely. We have Courtney here, 11-year-old, just started private school. Tough to know how much to depend on assistive technology and how much mm-hmm. to keep working on handwriting when peers are long past this. And we hear this a lot, again, talking about this age factor. A lot of schools will eventually come in and accommodate if a child struggles with dysgraphia and just provide assistive technology, either speech to text or some kind of, you know, typing technology. And so parents do struggle with that. Do you have any advice that, like, you know, how much, you know, once they get to a certain age?
You know, we run into this kind of a question all the time, because at the learning centers, what we're really doing, you may come to us for issues with writing or reading, and we're going to look at the underlying skills that are causing those academic pieces to be difficult. And so some of the kinds of things that we need to do to build the foundation in there aren't going to look like school. And there's going to be a period of time where there's a gap between, you know, what they're doing at school and what they're doing to correct the issue ultimately. And eventually that gap is going to close. But in the meantime, I would certainly say when there are supports in place, you want your child to be able to keep up. And so if they've got supports for them, absolutely use them. I just encourage people, you know, we don't want to think about putting supports in place that your child is going to have to use forever. We want to use it while they need it and then build those underlying skills so that, you know, they're not going to have to in the long run. And so, you know, I mean, most teachers are really requiring, you know, I want to say typewritten, but printed, you know, papers and things now. So make sure your child, you know, takes a keyboarding class and can really do that quickly. And I would continue to work with graphomotor skills. There's just great connections going on in the brain there, but use the assistive technology as well to help him keep up for her.
Absolutely. We have Marley or Marley. I'm currently in the process of getting my ADHD son tested for dyslexia. He's in fifth grade and struggles to write and hold a pencil. Mm-hmm. Courtney has another follow-up question with her 11-year-old. How often do you need to do these activities to see progress?
Let me go back to the first one about holding a pencil. We find that some of our students, some of them like mechanical pencils. Now, if they have a really super hard grip, they may end up breaking the lead a lot. But mechanical pencils have different sizes, different grips. They feel different. And so you might just do some exploring with your child to see what feels comfortable in their hand, most comfortable. And then they might, you know, have their special pencil that they really, really like. And then in terms of how often to do them, because most of the things that we do and that we talk about are really looking to break old habits and make new neural pathways in the brain. And so as frequently as possible, you know, you want to do that. So if you're doing this graphomotor exercise, you want to do it 10 or 15 minutes each day. Just, you know, devote a little bit of time. And if you can't do it every single day, you know, aim for every day. And if you miss one or two, then it's not going to be a big deal. But you want to do it frequently in short bursts.
Right. Because you're really literally retraining the brain and, mm-hmm. and all these old patterns. Absolutely. Marley adds, he also struggles to tie his shoes. So that kind of is in line with what you were saying with the fine motor skills and tie mm-hmm. bags. He hates writing. I have tried almost everything I could think of to help him. And so we definitely hear that. She says she's in Massachusetts. How and where can I go to get my son tested for dysgraphia?
I don't have anywhere off the top of my head to refer you to. You would have to check around a little bit. We do, remote as well as on-site evaluations. And so you can contact our office and we can do, testing and sessions, you know, with you remotely.
Absolutely. And we look at, even if it's remote, we look at a writing sample. We want to look to see how they're forming their letters. We may have you upload or send us some pictures of writing samples. We can do different kind of writing evaluations to see how they write in the moment, you know, kind of under pressure to a prompt, or what happens when it's just free writing. Because you can look at a lot of different skills there. Is it a time constriction, an organization problem? Is it language and getting ideas down on paper? because all of those are involved. Let's see. Lurel, I hope I'm saying that correctly, just asking as well as for dyslexia. So asking for the same thing for dysgraphia, but as well, are there diagnostic tools for dyslexia as well?
There are. And we test for dyslexia. I find that it should be much more common in the schools now to test for dyslexia. Many states are kind of mandating that they do that, but also people don't quite know how to test for dyslexia or what to do about it. So you just really have to check and ask specifically, you know, with your school, with your with any evaluators that you're calling. But we do both dyslexia and dysgraphia.
And I see Chauncey kind of commented and responded, just saying that the school district OT evaluation sometimes can be helpful if you are at a public school. An OT can look at that as far as dysgraphia, if they're really looking at some underlying motor, fine motor difficulties and delays. So thank
Definitely.
You for that.
And when you're talking about the difficulty with tying shoes and all of that fine motor, those fine motor issues. Yes.
Great. We have Olga asking, she says, thank you for the topic. Our kid has high functioning autism and struggles with writing and reading comprehension. More information to help him out and to help him improve. So any suggestions in regards to the comprehension element of writing?
You know, I am actually going to give you a technique that is kind of connected with comprehension. So after we finish with questions, I'm going to give you a technique for that.
Perfect. Yes, looking forward to that. Let me see. Allie is saying, I have a 12-year-old son. He has beautiful penmanship, but it does hurt him and it takes him a long time to write. The other thing that he struggles with is organizing his thoughts and getting those thoughts on paper. The ideation and starting is really hard for him. What part of dysgraphia is that? Or is that something else? Like just getting started?
You know, there really are a lot of pieces there that you said. I mean, the fact that he can write beautifully, but it hurts him, he's probably drawing those letters and putting a lot of intention into that. And so just working on the flow, which we showed in the graphomotor sequence, again, especially, you know, once you get the metronome involved, the flow of writing, just so that so much of his mental energy isn't going into getting the letters down on paper. So even though it's beautiful, it's taking a lot of energy for him, and that needs to be more automatic. And then a lot of dysgraphic learners have difficulty, even kids who aren't dysgraphic, often have difficulty just getting started. And again, the technique I'm going to show you will help with that.
Yes. Excited for that. Marav is commenting about their experience as a student. My teacher used to take points off in tests because she couldn't understand what I wrote. And because I had so many arrows to let her understand which part of the text in the page comes after another. So I guess writing, it wasn't organized, and then a lot of arrows just to help with that kind of like, this is what I meant, or this is the flow of ideas, definitely. And as I can still find it hard for job interviews and other areas of my life. So that is why it's crucial, you know, when we say, yes, assistive technology absolutely helps, but your child is eventually going to grow up and needs to be able to write quickly, or we don't want them to struggle forever. So that's why it is important to work on and develop those underlying skills. Thank you for sharing. And,
you know, we had a high school student on one of our shows a while back who was really, she had auditory processing disorder. So it's a different issue, but the bottom line is you've got to help the teachers understand. because, you know, for her with auditory processing disorder, they had no idea how exhausted she was and the fact that she couldn't get all that information. And her mom, you know, kind of taught her from the time she was about 8 years old how to start to advocate for herself. And so together with your child who's dysgraphic, you know, it may look like they're just rushing or they don't really care or they're just trying to get it done. I mean, those are typical things that people say. But that is not the case at all. And so, you know, you may have to do some education to the teacher of dysgraphia. Many teachers don't really know what that is. They're not really taught that. And that empowers your child too, to go in and say, here's what I'm dealing with. Here's what this means for me. And I need a little bit more time. Or if you don't know what I'm saying, can you ask me so that I can tell you, you know? So just, you know, the teachers need to understand and helping your child to self-advocate a little bit, you know, with you alongside when they're young is really powerful.
Absolutely. We have one more, and then I see a lot of questions in regards to written expression and getting started. And so I want to make sure that we get to that technique. Okay. So Nicolette, kind of asking a separate question, our OT expert at the school stated there was nothing to do to help older dysgraphic students, but to teach them how to type. This opens a whole other world, a whole open door for offering to help to build these motor skills for written expression. So kind of just making that correlation again to the age of a student and, you know, and an expert saying, you know, just teach them how to type, use assistive technology. They're too old. We're not going to spend time with that. And so, you know, we have definitely seen that older students can absolutely get over this barrier and can learn how to write and for, you know, those hindrances to go away. As far as letter formation, to be able to be quick, to be able to take notes in class, all of those things. So we've definitely seen that. That is, we do not believe that to be true, that you just need to teach them how to type and get around it.
So. Right. But I will say that, you know, now they are unlearning some pretty deep habits the older they are. And so that becomes challenging because it's kind of like the brain can reroute. It can with training. It takes some time and definitely consistency. And typing is a very important skill in this day and age. So, you know, definitely take advantage of that as well.
Jess is asking, she came in a bit late. My son was diagnosed with a written expression disorder. Is that the same as dysgraphia? Is that in the same vein as dysgraphia? Some advice on that.
So that's really interesting. I put it under the umbrella of dysgraphia. Some experts put it under that umbrella and some kind of separate that. But essentially, yes, it's still the issue of getting the thoughts organized and out onto paper.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And NP, this is the question about the process that we just explained. Hearing a lot of great ideas for improving handwriting, would love additional input for how to help to translate thoughts into written word after the fine motor and handwriting has improved. So that power write technique is, I'm telling you, it is a game changer. So if you want to go back, you know, you can always access this show afterwards. It's recorded. Go back and listen to that part. And get that technique down. That is something that we recommend that you do to deal with that issue. Let's see. We have Jess again asking, yes, my son was also diagnosed with auditory processing disorder and reading and writing seems to tire him out. Do we see that often, that with auditory issues, that writing is also a challenge?
We do. Honestly, I see auditory processing connected to so many things. Mm-hmm. And Jess, I just listening to you, I think, oh my gosh, she needs to call us. but yes, I do see that connection. A lot of times with auditory processing, what's happening is the student is not getting complete information when they're listening, because there are just gaps. Their auditory delay, they can't keep up. And so they're always trying to connect the dots, which gets in the way of comprehension and then, you know, expressive language. I mean, there's a lot there then that contributes to language organization and getting it out. So there isn't always, but certainly we do see that overlap, mm-hmm. and then overlapping into reading and spelling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Denise is asking, can fine motor issues be different than dysgraphia? She has a 10-year-old boy with ADHD, sensory processing disorder, and vision therapy. Writing and tying shoes, hates drawing unless it's swords or something else he is fixated on. And she's mm-hmm. from Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. So fine motor and dysgraphia, there's a connection, but it can also be separate.
Yes. Yes. Right. And sometimes you get this dysgraphic issue that is really almost confined to the area of writing. And mm-hmm. with other students, you have the motor issues and the sensory processing issues that are bigger. So dysgraphia may be a piece of that, but there's just a bigger challenge there. And when I talked about working at the core learning level, there's just a lot of issues going on at the core learning level that really need to be addressed, probably retained reflexes, and then a lot of integration and crossing the midline and all different, you know, gross motor, fine motor, sensory motor skills. So there's just a lot at that level that's just bigger than dysgraphia only.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. We have some debate in the chat. Oh, this is a long one. And you know, if you want to comment and kind of add to this thread, we have some parents kind of responding to each other just in regards to writing instruction in school, traditional writing instruction in school. Most dyslexic and dysgraphic students didn't receive enough writing instruction with explicit and repetition. In kindergarten through third grade, these students, I think, relied on the alphabet, so available and printed across the top of the room. But once these students reached fourth grade and above, the alphabet was not available on the wall for them to copy anymore. And without explicit instruction, this causes much more struggles with their memory and motor for forming letters. Yes, we see that all the time. Sometimes when we are testing, most often when we're testing for dyslexia, we actually have the student write the alphabet for us from memory. And I cannot tell you how many students, you know, even teenagers or, you know, even highly adults. Intelligent students, yes, even adults cannot remember the alphabet. And sometimes we get kids that'll start singing to try to help them remember, but just even being able to recall visually what a letter looks like mm-hmm. without having it in front of them. That's where you really need to do some kind of an evaluation to see how that skill breaks down without kind of those classroom prompts. So absolutely. And then parents are kind of commenting on that thread. Yes, I've seen this with my kids. Absolutely. So that's something to look out for too, parents. It's just like, are they drawing letters? That's what a lot of parents are commenting on that comment you made, Jill, about like, you know, get kids with, you know, with dysgraphia sometimes draw their letters mm-hmm. instead of form their letters. Nicolette asks, can dyslexia and auditory processing disorder look like the same thing?
Yes, there are definitely some things that are going to be overlaps there. With dyslexia, you usually also have a visual component in there, but there's a huge auditory piece to reading. And so if your brain is not processing all of the sounds, you know, accurately, then you're going to have difficulty. You may have difficulty speaking and pronouncing words, and you'll have difficulty then with that, with the auditory piece of reading, which is phonemic awareness, phonological awareness, sounding out words. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of overlap. A lot of these things, you know, kind of overlap, which is why it's so critical to really get in and evaluate for this individual student, what are the pieces that are not supporting them well enough?
Absolutely. That's why really, even when the student comes to us with a diagnosis, we need to see what does that look like? What skills, what individual skills are breaking down? Because a diagnosis could be very broad.